Hi, I'm Abby McCarthy. Welcome to my podcast, Hidden Voices, where I'll be giving lesser known but very influential classical music composers the platform they deserve but haven't always been given. Today I'm turning my attention to the composer, author and suffragette Ethel Smyth. You might not recognise her name, but her influence on the development of 20th century British music and her role in the fight for women's rights and acceptance of same-sex relationships is really important. To truly understand her music, alongside listening to it, we'll also follow the story of her life. Ethel was born in the mid-19th century to an upper-class British military family. She was very well educated, as you would expect, and really admired her governess who had studied music at the Leipzig Conservatoire, so much so she hoped to follow in her footsteps. She was a talented pianist and soprano, but she didn't want to focus on performance as was expected of a middle-class Victorian lady, and she quickly set her sights instead on becoming a professional composer. At the time this was almost laughable. Composing was considered to be a man's job, and she was met with much resistance. It's here we first feel her passion and stubborn nature. She made such a nuisance of herself that her father eventually relented and allowed her to leave to study at Leipzig at the age of 19. After campaigning for so long to study at the conservatoire, it seems really surprising that she left after only a year. Instead, she began studying with Heinrich von Herzenberg, who taught her the essentials of harmony and counterpoint. Her chamber music from this point is full of energy, vigour, but with a certain lightness of touch. You can really hear this in the last movement of her string quintet in E major. You can truly feel that Ethel really immersed herself in German musical culture, meeting and impressing famous composers like Brahms. In fact, he once confused some of her own counterpoint for that of Bach, which is a phenomenal compliment to receive. She then spent the next 10 years in Germany, writing and performing various chamber works. Her piano repertoire from this time was never published, however, and was only recently rediscovered and recorded. It reveals a deeply emotional side of Ethel, which she perhaps felt too vulnerable to share. She later wrote in her memoirs about how deeply in love she had fallen with Liesel von Herzenberg, her tutor's wife. Musicologist Kate Kennedy quite rightly believes this yearning shaped Ethel's existence. Her variations on an original theme, of an exceedingly dismal nature, are almost programmatic works of this time of her life. You can really feel the pain she felt. Thank you. Moving back to her publicly published works, Ethel returned to England and premiered her Serenade in D, but was really careful to hide the fact she was a woman, keeping her gender anonymous until after the premiere. It was actually really well received, especially for its orchestration and clear Brahmsian lyrical qualities. The success of this piece, and the help of her many aristocratic friends, secured a premiere of her Mass in D at the Royal Albert Hall. It is rumoured she sat and sang it herself at the piano to Queen Victoria, who was impressed just enough to give her a chance. Interestingly, she dedicated the piece to another love interest, Pauline Trevelyan, a bold move in 19th century Britain that definitely contributed to her lack of success in securing a cathedral performance. Not to mention the reluctance of the church to accept female musicians. She seemed unfazed by this, however, and was becoming increasingly strong-willed. This power and confidence can be clearly heard in the Mass's Gloria. We're beginning to hear the colourful sound worlds that Ethel is remembered for, and this is particularly evident in operatic writing. She was one of the first female composers to tackle such a large form, and she was really successful. Her opera The Records is her most famous work, and by setting it in Cornwall, she attempted to align herself, thematically if not musically, with British male composers of the pastoral tradition like Vaughan Williams. The overture is still regularly performed and enjoyed today. Thank you. who struggled to secure performances of operas in Britain at the time, but they were warmly received in France and Germany, where the operatic tradition was more strong. By 1910, Ethel had become more outwardly frustrated with the sexism she encountered in not only her career, but everyday life as a woman. She joined the suffragettes and was a very active member. Famously, she was imprisoned for 2 months after smashing a politician's window. Her March of the Women, composed for the suffragettes, provided an anthem for them that was very well known at the time. Reports actually say she conducted it with a toothbrush from her window in prison. Whether this is accurate will never be truly known, but it definitely fits the character we're beginning to feel. During World War I, Ethel was deployed as a radiologist in France and began to notice her hearing was deteriorating. This was devastating for her, but did inspire her to write a series of memoirs that made her very famous at the time. One of the last big works she wrote was her opera The Boatswain's Mate in 1916. The female protagonist is shown to be independent and financially self-sufficient, showing Ethel's work was becoming more overtly political. The aria, What If I Were You Again, is more sensitive than her earlier music and feels more distinctly British with its melancholy melody and light orchestration.
What if I were young again, careless and gay? What if I were young again, just for today? The hearts were in glory sitting with God through the vine leaves splitting. Well, I know if my heart were still young, where my thoughts would be now. When the long day's work was done, night coming fast, on the tired world would fall silence at last. The birds in the warm nests sleeping, the stars one by one forth peeping.
Sadly, her hearing continued to worsen and her output became smaller and smaller. She continued to write her memoirs, campaigned for the rights of female orchestral musicians, and became quite a famous figure, especially because of her on-off affair with Virginia Woolf. She received an honorary doctorate from Oxford in 1926 and has received great attention from contemporary musicologists such as Sophie Fuller, Jane Bernstein, and Laura Seddon. It's clear her importance cannot be underestimated and that her music should never be forgotten. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.